If you're ready to confront your destiny, if this is the moment that you've been praying for, tune in and listen to your cosmic cheerleader, Commander Lady Athena, for cosmic pep talks for closet Christ. The show is the voice of the Ashtar Command. The call is for you to step forward into your greatness. E-listening on Wednesday, we have an appointment with destiny.
Greetings in the living love of the Supreme Creator. I'm Commander Lady Athena, and you're listening to the voice of the Ashtar Command, Cosmic Pep Talks for Closet Christ. This evening, our seminar message is Prophetic Messages. Where do they come from, and how are they received? So if you're ready, take a deep breath and connect with the intention that you too are a receiver of divine messages. Everyone has the ability to hear from Spirit, to integrate the divine I Am presence, the Lord God of your being, and to live from that. Everyone has the gift of being able to hear, because each one of us is divinely created to hear directly from our Creator. There is absolutely no sentient being or life form on this planet that is not connected to the Creator and cannot hear. We can all hear. The thing of it is, do we listen? Do we live life where it's pushing us from event to event to event, to where we take no time to really listen? If we would listen, we would never fall into error. We would have happy, peaceful, centered, very, very beautifully balanced and fulfilling lives. So let's look at some of the ways that we do receive and find the ways that we can tuck in and also understand exactly what's happening in our world today, in the light of the many, many prophecies that we hear. So again, let's take a deep breath and ask for the clearance that is appropriate for you tonight, that whatever could be lifted through grace or lessened in its karmic impact, if that would be for your highest good, that could happen. You can ask for greater understanding, greater clarity, a closer connection with your divine presence, with the God that lives in you and operates through you as you. So first of all, where does prophecy come from? Prophecy always comes from time and the conditioned consciousness. In other words, consciousness is everything, the totality of what life has become awakened to. And every imprint of that awakening leaves an impression on the formless state of Akasha. Akasha is a Sanskrit word which basically means the invisible screen that takes the impression of consciousness to create form. It's like the cloudless sky that then the interjection of consciousness by any being impresses and informs it, and it becomes consciousness. Awareness is the level above consciousness. So we're not talking about awareness. We're talking about that which has been imprinted and previously conditioned and operates in what is called the timeline, or as I prefer to call it, and Ashtar prefers to call it, the time spiral. Because as he's often described it, meaning Ashtar, time is like a slinky. You know those toys you used to play with, or at least maybe have seen? They're a spiral that can be taken and formed into a loop or a tube torus, which recycles the Akasha that has become imprinted by consciousness. That's why history tends to repeat itself in cycles until you break out of that cycle through soul awareness and soul transcendence, as it's called, where you move into the higher soul body and transcend time into the eternal now. So everything in spirit is now. It's completed. It's done. It's finished. We're in the Jubilee, or the rest cycle of spirit. Everything in creation is completed. There's nothing new under the sun. There's a recycling of that which has already been completed. So all prophecy, even though it seems to be a foretelling or a projection on the timeline into the future, could be defined as past future. It's important to understand this. All experiences are like dust blowing back in our face when we go along the road very, very fast on a dirt road, and we stop suddenly, and the dust flows back into our face. That is how Jesus, in A Course of Miracles, has described our experiences. That we see only the past in everything we see. We see nothing as it truly is. For example, you look through a telescope at the vast starry constellations. But those same constellations don't actually exist as they're seen today through a telescope. Even science tells us that at a certain point when you advance into the future, you find that you're in the past. This is what we're talking about. We're revisiting the past. We look out and see the sky, the constellations, the stars, and all the things that seem to be in the cosmos physically. And they're not there anymore. The old galactic battles are not being fought anymore. The wars of Orion were in a long ago distant past, far, far away, like the Star Wars scenario. It's finished. It's done. It's not happening now. We have been lifted into a new energy completely. But we keep revisiting the past and trying to animate it. And so, depending on what we have locked into as what we believe is going to happen, is very much determining where we're going to find ourselves, the world we're going to be living in. So it's very important to awaken. Awaken. And only by asking, and truly with all your heart, above all else, wanting to see clearly that which truly is, will those sleeping eyes begin to awaken? Will we get out of the dream time, which is strung out through memories, to realize that there is no continuity in the experiences of life other than through bits of memory that we piece together to form our present sense of continuity and flow in life? Quantum physics has revealed that the particles and waves flash in and out of manifestation. We are like a flicker show. You know those old-time shows where they flickered the light? That's how we manifest in time-space, and we think we have continuity. We have memory. We don't have anything that holds us here except the repetitive patterns of replicated bits of memory. So what constitutes the mind? Memories, associations, expectations, hopes, wishes, desires, grasping, liking and disliking, avoiding and craving. These animate those patterns which in their conglomerate form what we call mind. The associative patterns of memory cause us to appear seemingly the same person every day we open our eyes. Notice how for a minute you don't know who you are or where you came from or what anything is until you start piecing it back together with your memory. So we might say that prophecy comes from the collective memories of everyone who has ever existed. We're just going to look on this planet, okay? Everyone who has ever existed on this planet. You have this huge collective consciousness. And any of you who are readers, who have read the Akashic or the psychic levels in those psychic and material realms beneath the absolute, you will notice that they move very quickly. When I'm reading for a person, I'll look through the third eye, and I'll see a rapid field coruscating of their consciousness, their imprints, their thought patterns, their emotional feelings. It forms a great kaleidoscopic display of color and symbols and past life imagery. And I could read for the same person as I have for a few, many, many, many times, and I'll get a different message each time. Because the psychic field is very malleable. It's constantly shifting and moving. But it tends to congeal itself, so to speak, in different lands and nations and amongst different peoples according to their prevailing culture, worldview, religious perspective, or lack thereof. So that each conglomerate of people will see a very different kaleidoscopic display when they look inwardly because they are tapping into that past, that field of memory, those associative bits of cognition that have impressed the blank screen of Akasha. Just like that beam that comes on the blank screen in a movie theater. You look above your head and you'll see a beam of light. And in that beam of light, impressed on that screen, comes all the imagery. comes the soundtrack. All of the light and sound and color and imagery. That is the prophetic field. That is the impressing of consciousness upon the blank screen of Akasha. And we sit in the movie theater of our life, looking at the blank screen of Akasha, and projecting through our mind our associative bits of memory, our stories, our life scenarios that change with each incarnation. Each incarnation, you get a new brain, a new persona, a new field of endeavor and exploration. You literally get to reinvent yourself. But you come with your baggage of movie reels, of associative bits of memory from previous lifetimes, but it's kept in the subconscious. And so it comes to the surface periodically when something triggers a familiar pattern. And we call that life. The masters call it dream time. The masters call it being asleep. So these are good things to ponder in your meditation, contemplate. So spirit is now. The mind is in time. The mind is memory and desire and all of the things we just described. So, every culture and religion has their own worldview. And when I say religion, I also mean atheism, because that's also a religion. Totalitarianism, communism, democracy, all of those things are very strongly conditioning worldviews that will bend the mind and predispose it to picking up and tuning in to things that align with that particular perspective. So, the prophets and prophetic messengers of each worldview and religion will see and interpret through that filter. They can't help but do that because it's a collective. You see, that they're tapping into that which has already been lived out. Now, each culture will also have their national spirit, which is the major governing entity or being that presides over that culture and nation. And they are attended by minor spirits, devas, elementals. And these will tend to color and influence the prophecies and messages that sensitives and channels and people who are attuned will receive. So every religion has its major demigods or goddesses, its attendant guardians, angels, devas, and major and minor religious spirits, which influence what and how the messages are received. Religious spirits are really interesting. I've been able to observe them in action many, many, many times in my participation in various religions. And religious spirits can be very dogmatically territorial in their attempt to keep their religious followers in the fold, so to speak. So, for example, if you become a born-again Christian, your dreams and everything will line up according to that particular belief system, that dogmatic, doctrinal, biblical worldview.
And you will see through that lens. And you will have angels and various beings that appear to you that coincide with that particular version of Christianity. And there are many, many versions, I think 32,000 different sects within Christianity itself. Now, once you commit to a belief system of any kind, you come under the influence of its governing entities and the influences that I just mentioned. If you attend any gathering, spiritual or otherwise, three times in a row, according to the masters, you will start to attract the attention of those presiding spirits. When you fully embrace and believe and buy into any thought system, any doctrine or dogma, you will begin to manifest and experience according to your faith and beliefs in that system. And that is why so many believe their way is the only way and will attempt to convert others. So we're not saying that anything is right or wrong here. We're just looking at that which is, according to the teachings of those men and women who now are designated adepts or masters, that have mastered the mind, that have mastered the things that most of us are still struggling with. They are perfected in terms of the evolution of this particular planet. And so they can see clearly and offer a very objective and practical way of viewing things that gets you out of the ozones and the wishful thinking and all of that into practical spirituality, practical day-to-day looking to see what is there rather than what appears to be there. They let you look behind that veil that our conditioning holds before our true vision. So it is said in the Bible that it is done unto us according to our belief. So belief is really, really, really important to move beyond. You don't have any beliefs once you have awakened. All of that falls aside, and you become the knower with a capital K. So we'll contemplate that a little, huh? Let's have tea with that. Once you buy into a belief system, you come under that influence, which in turn colors the way you see things. So is there only one way, a one-size-that-fits-all belief system or religion? Well, obviously not. Because each individual is conditioned by their past lifetimes, their past inclinations, the actions that have repeated into habits to where they carry those strong impressions from life to life. They have their karmic dispositions, each very unique because we have different passages through time-space. They're conditioned by their present culture and its prevailing religious practices and rituals and worldview and overall atmosphere. You go into each country, you'll feel it has a very unique atmosphere. And therefore, each soul naturally, in each lifetime, affinitizes with what is appropriate, with what is familiar to them initially, but spiritually, what is appropriate and best for their progression and learning and unfoldment in consciousness. So we'll tend to incarnate in groups with people that we have known before, friends and enemies, and we'll change roles. One life will be the mother, next will be the father, next will be the son, next will be the daughter, or the grandparents. It keeps shifting so that the soul can have a variety of experiences and work out its issues until love prevails. So when a person converts to another belief system, it is because they've learned all they needed to know, and it was time to move on into another classroom of consciousness. That means that wherever you are where you are meant to be until you are guided or pushed to move on. You as soul will actually pull the rug out from under your ego's feet if you try to stay in a place you've outgrown. You'll get fired, kicked out, exiled, whatever, but you will move on. So however you view things, you are right. Whatever you say, you're absolutely right, according to your present understanding, which will keep unfolding and moving to ever higher perspectives. You know, consciousness is always in motion. It's never still. Awareness is still. Consciousness is ever in motion. In fact, a synonym for the mind is restlessness. People often say, oh, I want peace of mind. It's impossible. You cannot possibly have peace of mind. It's not in the mind that you find peace. The mind is agitation, restlessness, boredom, discontent, wishing this, wishing that, avoiding this, avoiding that. That's that kitten caboodle that we call the mental body. It's never still. It's like a agitated ocean. You have to dive deep, 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 deep into the depths of awareness in your innermost being that you find the peace of God that bypasses understanding. So spiritual life is the expansion and constant broadening of consciousness. It is the expansion of one's compassion. And we are here to keep learning and inquiring and advancing and letting go and transcending and moving beyond. It's eternally traveling consciousness. And all doctrines, dogmas, scriptural dependency, the falling of others and their beliefs is like the ABCs. The preliminaries to one's own self-realization and direct experience. But at some point, you also transcend experience, because all experience, you see, is in consciousness. To go into awareness, you have to transcend every phenomenal manifestation of belief and becomingness and dependency on outer things. So, with one's own spiritual development, all prejudicial biases fall away as the mental and karmic tendencies dissolve in the light of soul awareness, in the light of illumined understanding. Unconditional love is. Eventually, we will all spiritually mature into all barriers to universal love fall away, and we shine forth in Christ-like love, in Krishna-like love, in Buddha-like love. So don't get hung up on the word. The word Christ comes from the Greek, Christos, which means the anointed one. Wouldn't we all like to be the anointed one? It's a state of consciousness that is supremely love, supremely peace, and supreme radiance. So what do all prophets and prophetic messengers, seers, regardless of culture and religious persuasion, have in common? Well, To receive, they all have to shift into an altered state of consciousness, preferably a higher state of consciousness, which is not always the case. But real receivers will shift into a higher state of consciousness. This involves the induction of a paranormal state by some practice or ritual. Each has to shift into this altered state of consciousness out of the ordinary beta level that we call the chit-chat mind. We have to go at least into the alpha. But some will go into the theta or even the delta state. We would like to stay in the alpha state on the borderline of the theta, which brings forward that conscious receivership. You see, we're in a time when we need to move from being unconscious mediums to conscious mediators, where we're in complete control of our vehicles of consciousness at all times, and we never give it over to an outside entity. It's very important. That's the Aquarian Age approach. In the old Atlantean times, they used to do all sorts of trance induction, all sorts of, in the fall of Atlantis, it started moving into very dark psychism and occultism, very, very dark stuff, where they used mind control and drugs and all that nonsense. But this is the Aquarian Age in which we're moving into being conscious instruments and conduits for higher awareness to come into our awareness and to radiate through us in what we speak, write, teach, do. Our very presence becomes one of conscious divinity. That's the ideal. So some of these conscious altering rituals, which are familiar to all of us, are chanting, singing, dancing, drumming, group and private worship, fasting, praying, yogic practices, tapas, the mortification of the flesh, prophetic dreams. For example, all of the women in my family had prophetic dreams, every single one of them. My mother in particular always had prophetic dreams. She had prophetic dreams that assured her that I was going to be carried full term and given birth through her, because all the doctors said it was impossible for her to carry me as a child. But I kept appearing to her in her dreams and showing her and wore the outfits that she saw in her dreams later on as I was growing up. So she knew not only would I be a healthy baby and born, but I would grow up, because she saw me through my childhood and onward. So that is one way. Then there's visions, and then there's the spinning like the dervishes do. And these are all ways of exiting the normal consciousness and entering the supernormal, the paranormal, the state beyond the ordinary. Of course, you have also the yajnas, the fire ceremonies and rituals, and the mantras and meditational practices. Those would be the higher approaches that we would use in most instances. Now, a psychic and more of a psychic type of induction would include trance-like states, mediumistic circles and seances, auto-suggestion, hypnotism, divination, the use of hallucinogenic herbs, entering the dream time, having visions, vision quests, astral projection, inhaling certain scents like the oracles of Delphi, smoking the sacred peace pipe, going on vision quests, and, you know, those of us in a more mystical vent, we would go on perhaps a religious retreat or enter a period of solitude, silence, meditation, soul travel. You know, these would be awareness-expanding techniques used by the mystic, for example. Now, many Asian and African cultures practice rituals which invite possession by gods, goddesses, ancestors, national spirits. that's part of their culture. And so we won't say anything negative about it, but that's not what you would want to do as a Western person listening to me, which probably most of you are in one of the Westernized nations. You would never want to invite possession or any spirit to take you over in any way, shape, or form. Now, if you're an initiate or disciple of a master and operating out of an ashram from the inner planes, you may be overshadowed, as they call it. I prefer to call it overlighted by the thought emanation, or how would I say, the soul emanation of a particular master while you're writing, speaking, teaching. For example, me doing these radio shows, I'm overlighted by my upline of lineages of masters to which I work, which are quite a few, as a matter of fact. But I feel the influence because it's a steady flow of information without thought. It just flows through me. And that would be an example of overlighting. Pay attention when that happens to you. It's when a wisdom beyond your normal state speaks through you, wisdom that you didn't know you had, but you did have it, otherwise it couldn't come through you, because you're not being possessed and you're not being spoken through by another entity. You are actually being inspired by the consciousness of your master, who has every right to do that. But a master, a real master, will never possess you, ever. If they do that, you know they're from the astral plane. And that doesn't make them evil or anything like that. You just know they're operating on a lower level. So an example of how different nations sometimes are guided by mediums, you have, for example, the state oracle of Tibet, who I've seen will go into a wild trance, and during that trance becomes possessed and occupied by the guardian spirit of Tibet, or spirits. I don't know if there's more than one, but there is a guardian spirit of Tibet, and will give forth prophecies which pertain to Tibet, warning and foretelling its future. And the Dalai Lamas consult the state oracle on national concerns. In ancient Greece, you had the oracles of Delphi, which also in a like manner used to be consulted by the officials, the political and spiritual officials of the time, as well as the populace. So what do all prophets and mediums and messengers have in common? All messages are thus filtered through the prevailing belief systems and cultural setting of both the prophet and those whom the prophet or messenger is addressing. For example, if you go give a very born-again Christian prophetic message right out of the Bible to a group of tribals in some remote part of the world, they wouldn't have a clue as to what you're talking about. It totally would not fit their worldview whatsoever. It would fall on deaf ears. And the attempt usually is when missionaries go in, they try to convert those tribals into a Western way of life, which brings in disease, it brings in all sorts of problems in that culture, because that culture is meant to be pure. It's not meant to be Christianized or Westernized or made to deny its indigenous understandings and forsaking its original tongue. Oh, what harm is done when we do that to people, when we disrupt their unique cultural presentation and their language. It's so important for the indigenous people to speak their own language. Why should everyone speak English? English is actually the language for business and commerce. It has very little ability to articulate the intricacies of higher consciousness. There is where you have to learn Sanskrit or Pali or Tibetan or Chinese. or Egyptian, some of the sacred languages that actually address consciousness states, Tibetan and Pali being the greatest of all. Sanskrit, Tibetan, and Pali. So we just mess with people in our very ignorant attempts to make everybody think the same way, dress the same way, speak the same way, live in the same square houses, which makes you a square. It brings you down into very, very limited third-dimensional perspective. And that perspective tends to destroy and exploit and colonize and wreck the planet. In 200 and some years, we have almost totally ruined the planet ecologically. And there's tribes in Africa and India and Asia and in the jungles of South America and throughout the planet where the land has not in one single instance degraded by their usage for hundreds and hundreds of years, because they know how to live in harmony with spirit and with the earth. Oh, do we have a lot to learn from the indigenous peoples, and yet we deny them a voice. They must have the voice in the United Nations and in every world summit where the environment is discussed and the impact of their impending propositions are brought before the tribal indigenous elders for their approval and sanction. For they alone were given by Great Spirit the custodianship for keeping our earth viable, harmonious, and in balance. And without their voice, we have no authentic leadership on how to survive on this planet, which we're very quickly coming to the end of its viability unless we wake up and change entirely the way we have lived. So, in the case of receivers and visionaries, usually there's an inner and audible voice heard only to them. This is called in Catholicism, inner locution, which is inner hearing. H.P. Blavatsky referred to it as the voice of the silence. It's also known as the voice of the conscience. It's also known by more charismatic Protestant Christians as the voice of God or the Holy Spirit when it is speaking into one's heart. So, in each case, it's the person that seems to, the visionary that seems to hear and receive the visuals clairvoyantly and clairaudiently, but those that gather around them, like in Fatima when the three little visionaries saw the Blessed Mother appear, the group saw only a light appear in the tree, but the visionaries saw the form of the Divine Mother appear to them and heard her speaking inwardly, although the crowd could not. So this is often the case with those who are specially called, let's say, as divine visionaries or even divine prophets. They live in a world of their own, and it's not the same world that most people live in and experience as reality. They live in a different realm. So you can see that the prophetic manifestation can be both subjective and objective to varying degrees, depending on who is involved. You know, in the case of the Marian visionaries, they're in such a deeply internalized state of divine absorption, with their eyes turned upward, that they are insensitive even when the corneas are touched. People have tried to bring up a strong heat or other sensation near them. They're impervious to everything. They cannot be taken out of that trance by the normal reactions to stimuli. So they're caught up in a very different state of consciousness. when they're truly receiving these divine experiences. Okay, what about the prophets of today? We're hearing a lot of apocalyptic end-time events being foretold. In my opinion, these all come from the past. You will also hear prophecies that are very, very positive in nature. Those tend to be what I believe are actually tuning in to what is coming forward. What we have to remember is that everything changed on our planet, on the timeline, and in what we are actually functioning under with the advent of Jesus the Christ. The Old Testament told about the law, and in the Bible, it's very interesting because the law is referred to as the curse of the law and the ministry of death, which I was shocked when I found that in the Bible. And so, there were 618 different laws that people had to live to the very letter, or dire things were done to them. And nobody could live under those 618 laws. They were almost impossible to fulfill to the letter. So everyone looked for the coming of the prophesied Messiah. The Messiah came, but was unrecognized because he came as a lamb, as a peacemaker, not as the warrior who was going to overthrow the Roman government at the time. He had a different kingdom and a different way. But there were 323 prophecies that were fulfilled by Jesus the Christ alone in all of history, and they were fulfilled to the very letter, to the very utterances he made on the cross and at different times in his life. And most were of these prophecies were foretold by the prophet Isaiah. Primarily, the book of Isaiah deals with those prophecies, and, you know, they're spread throughout the Old Testament. In fact, the Old Testament was a foretelling entirely of the coming of the Messiah. So Jesus fulfilled all the laws and all the prophets and prophecies by his coming. And what he did was shift our collective consciousness from the curse of the law, the old Atlantean and Lemurian and karma, and the pre-Adamic race karma. He wiped that all off, fulfilled it, and caused us to enter the age of grace. This is the age of the Holy Spirit, which is the very spirit of truth, the very spirit of prophecy, true prophecy, the very spirit of truth and peace. And that is what he, as the Prince of Peace, brought. Well, what about the book of Revelation? Well, according to the Master Dzogchen, DK, the Tibetan master, that pertains to what will happen at the end of the Age of Capricorn, just prior to when we enter into the Pralaya. The Pralaya is a cycle of rest after a cycle of manifestation, which is called a Manvantara. The Age of Capricorn will find humanity, I'm quoting him, occultly saved, which means that they will have all attained the third degree of initiation, which is the equivalent of the transfiguration that Jesus showed forth on the Mount of Transfiguration, where he turned into dazzling white radiant light. And that was a foretelling of what is before all of humanity as it becomes one with it, the soul, as a collective atonement or salvation or integration or return to wholeness, however you want to phrase that. And that is a long, 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 long time away when you look at the timeline. It has nothing to do with today according to the Master DK in the Alice Bailey books that he transcribed, word to word, to his amanuensis, Alice Bailey. So I tend to align with that information because it's much more in alignment with what Sai Baba has said. We're moving into the Golden Age. And it's a mini Golden Age, apparently, within the four major cycles. But it'll last for at least... I'm not going to get into timelines because I screw myself up when I try to do that. But it'll last for a long time. So, at least 2,500 years, as far as we know. So these are things to ponder. Are the prophets that are looking at doomsday scenarios, are they looking at the past? That's my speculation. I don't know that I'm 100% accurate. Don't take my word for anything. Do your own homework. But after decades and decades of meditation and study and excellent training with excellent teachers and masters, I've been taught well, let's put it that way. So for each person, this whole thing involves a journey in consciousness from the lower ego mind to the higher mind or intellect, and from the intellect to the intuition, and from intuition to direct knowing. So the Aquarian Age goal is a transition from the unconscious medium to conscious mediator. And that's very important, those of you that are sensitive and receiving. You might want to outgrow the stage of channeling and having others speak through you and become a conscious mediator, a bridge to a higher level of seership and consciousness. And then you become a way shower, you see, for others. One of the things that is a atavistic tendency is spiritualism. Don't mean to step on any toes here, because every form of receiver, messenger is useful and helpful, and we need them. We need every one of you who are sensitive. But just saying, spiritualism and seances and things of that nature were the practice, the religion, actually, in Atlantis, which was purely astral. So going back to those practices of channeling and mediumism and all of that, and spiritualism, where you call forward spirits and ancestors and talk to the dead, that's a backtracking into a practice that we need to outgrow. This is the age where we need the illumined mind that's joined with the heart, so you don't just have a dry intellect, but you have a person who is a practical, conscious mediator with a very well-trained mind. You need a very well-disciplined, focused, trained mind. I'm not talking about ego mind here. I'm talking about the higher mind or the intellect or just plain spiritual practicality. You need that, and you need it to be filled with the proper training and knowledge that gives you a platform through which you can, the spirit can use you, your soul, your higher nature can manifest through the information. You know, if you don't have any training and understanding and background, how are you going to be able to speak or write or teach if that's your particular calling in life? So you need to train the mind. And it needs to be infused with the soul so that you have a working, cohesive instrument where the thought, word, and action cooperate and flow as one in accordance with the divine plan. And each of us comes in predisposed to a particular way of hearing from God. Let's put it that way. Very Christian way of phrasing it there. But it works. Now, in terms, again, of the apocalyptic, which actually means the lifting of the veil, but we tend to think of it in terms of the doomsday, end of time kind of scenarios. In terms of that, I would strongly suggest that you think twice before you buy into that kind of a belief system, because if we're not careful, we're going to take that particular path on the parallel probable timeline, and I think it's the lower path. I really don't believe that that is the path that we want to take. And but you know, it's up for you to discern and to commune with the Lord God of your innermost being as to where you want to place your focus. What do you want to manifest in our future? We're going to go somewhere, and we're going to go where we have the predominant focus of attention. You know, you've got to keep your eyes single. And Jesus said very clearly, if you keep your eyes single, that is focused in the soul center, your whole body will be filled with light. And there's no karma in Christ. There's no karmic law that can bind you when you step free through the grace of the Christ. And the grace of the Christ is available to everyone. You don't have to buy into a religious doctrinal belief system. You don't have to do any of that. You just need to come to God and love God with all your heart, mind, strength, and soul. And love your fellow man as yourself, because that man or woman out there is another you. There's only one divine creator that breathed life into every soul. And that's you and me and everyone. And we are the uniquely begotten Son of God in our collectivity, and the uniquely cherished beloved of the Lord. And God's will for you is perfect Satchitananda, perfect peace, perfect bliss, perfect love, perfect reality. And that's within reach if you are at that stage in your life where that is what you want more than anything else. And keep your eyes single. Keep the focus inwardly. Realize this world that you see outwardly is projected from that inner screen of Akasha, that inner screen of consciousness upon the blank screen of Akasha. So you are not in the world. The world is in you, in your mind, in your memory. It appears only when you remember it. And even your personal sense of limited identity is only within your mind. In the highest truth, you have never left the heart of God. Remain you still as God created you in original innocence and peace. That is the truth. All else is something the mind has made up. So live in God. Live in the present moment, in the peace of God, which is always a choice. The peace of God is present now. What about the outer political arena? Forget it. It's old tapes replaying. It's old karma manifesting. Oh, there are some that are going to be called to participate in that because it's their karma to do so. Don't get involved if it's not your business. And the highest duty that we can fulfill in our lifetime is to awaken to the divine self that we truly are. To awaken and move into that awareness that is the peace of God, the awareness of God, the ever-expanding love and creativity of God, the allness and the fullness of the all that is. That's also present all the time. It's all a matter of focus. Where are you going to place yours? Become the prophet of your own life. Your life is your message. So whatever you put forth is your message. Make it a prophetic one of the grace of God, of the peace of God, of the well-being and the transformation of our planet and our world into its true, beautiful, lovely appearance, as it was originally in the thought and mind of the Creator. The thought and mind of the Creator has never changed. It saw all of its creation and saw it was good. And when it saw man, it said it was very, very good. And then God rested, and so should we. Rest in God as a planet rests in space, as a leaf born by the holy breath, and be happy. So, that's our message for this evening. I bless all of you that you may awaken to the pure and holy being that you have always been and will always be, forever and eternally, one with God. So let's go out chanting on IQ. Deep breath. On IQ. Blessings and grace to all the beings in all of the worlds, and to every man, woman, and child on this beautiful planet Earth. And blessings to Bumata, our wonderful Gaia, our beautiful Earth. May she be blessed in all of her kingdoms of nature. Be blessed and flourish and thrive in the love of the Creator, Adonai.